Dear Miss Lake, by A.J. Pearce, read by Anna Popplewell. With the author's note and acknowledgements read by the author. We have heard a good deal about the end of the march being the most tiring, the last days of the battle most trying, and so on. But it is true. It helps when you realise that. And people who lose homes, health, or their nearest ones at this stage of the war have our deepest sympathy of all. The sacrifice is no less worthwhile, but I feel that if possible, it may be just a little harder to bear. My warmest good wishes to you all. The Editor, Woman's Own Magazine, 20th of April, 1945. Don't think, because I speak lightly, she doesn't know what nervous fears are. She doesn't know the agony they can be, or she wouldn't joke about them. She does, I assure you. And do you know why she jokes about them? Because sometimes she's frightened too. Greta Lamb, Woman's Own Magazine, 19th of May, 1944. In memory of my grandparents. Hampshire, England, July 1944. Chapter 1. Bunty has a surprise. Guy Collins was a man of some talents, but until now he had kept motorcycle mechanics under his hat. As the sun shone down on a beautiful July morning, I walked up to the entrance of Dower Cottage to see both Guy and his brother flat on their backs, marvelling at the workings of what, by the sound of it, was a terrifically fascinating valve.
"I say, well done," said Charles from underneath the Sunbeam Model 8. "That's definitely looking better."
Major Charles Mayhew, who also happened to be my husband, was on 48 hours leave from his base, just under an hour away. With Italy beaten and put firmly in its place 4 months ago, and to my absolute joy, he had been sent back to Britain, where he had been promoted and sent to work on something operational and, as ever, enormously secret. The fact that he was currently lying on the ground and covered in oil did not for a moment detract from the thrill of having him home. After over 2.5 years of marriage, we were finally in the same country, and most important of all, he was safe. "Hello, darling," I said, bending to retrieve a piece of rag and a spanner. "Has the old death trap been playing you up again?" Charles looked up, smiled broadly, and leapt to his feet, greeting me with an enthusiastic kiss.
"She's a trooper," he said,
patting the cracked leather seat as if the motorcycle was a trusty old horse that had carried its owner through the Somme.
"Guy has just worked a small miracle. I say, you look smashing."
He kissed me again. Guy, who was also now on his feet, wiped his forehead with the back of his hand, leaving a large black smudge. He had rolled his sleeves up and was up to his forearms in grease.
"It should get you back to the base," he said, as he surveyed his handiwork. "Better test it out first, though."
Before Charles could reply, I moved in. "It's nearly lunch," I said, firmly. "I'm under strict instruction to bring you both up to the high field to meet the others. The children are mad keen to see you, and Bunty has laid on the most terrific spread. I'm to take you there straight away." I paused and looked at them. "You might want to clean up a bit first." At the promise of food, there was no argument from the men as they followed me into Mrs. Tavistock's cottage. Bunty's granny was always a generous hostess, and never more so than now. For the last fortnight, London had been under constant attack from Hitler's new flying bombs as he tried yet again to break British morale. Throughout the city, sirens rang out day and night with air raid alerts,